America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, where Americans and policymakers and thought leaders all face a basic challenge right now in this great nation. Are people a problem? Do we have just too many human beings in this world? Look, that is one of the big ideas behind Obamacare. And you may be rolling your eyes and saying, oh no, you're linking that to Obamacare. Well, sure. You know why? Because the Affordable Health Care Act tries to make birth control, the limiting of population, the limiting of new human beings, not only affordable, but free for everybody. It's one of the very, very few aspects of medical care where there's no co-pays, where you don't have to pay anything, where it's got to be guaranteed. We have birth control and literally no limit to it. And by the way, the whole idea that we have too many human beings, the idea of death panels, remember that? Well, it's not really death panels, and they're not going to be people deciding, group of people deciding whether you live or die. But the idea of rationing care is also part of the controversy about the so-called Affordable Health Care Act, which is why it is more pertinent than ever to talk about the war on humans. That's part of our focus in this Science and Culture Hour with the scholars from Discovery Institute here in Seattle. I'm joined in studio by John West. John, of course, is the director of the Discovery Institute, is associate director of Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture, and he is producing this documentary. It is a documentary called The War on Humans, and you can, by the way, go ahead for free and watch the trailer at going to our website, michaelmedved.com, clicking on the science and culture icon, and you can watch what we're talking about. The other leading force behind this documentary and behind these ideas is Wesley J. Smith. Wesley J. Smith is a senior fellow at Discovery Institute, and he writes the Human Exceptionalism blog at National Review Online. Wesley, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Michael. Hi, John.
Okay, so Wesley, let's go first to you, because John shared with me, and I'm sure you've seen it too, this amazing piece from Ecology and Society. It's based on a study that laments the fact that human life expectancy has increased because it's bad for animals. First of all, is it true that the fact that human beings are living longer? Is that really bad for animals?
I wouldn't say so. And in fact, what you're seeing here with regard to that study, which I actually haven't seen yet, is an astonishing level of anti-humanism that has, in my view, taken over and polluted the environmental movement. You know, the environmental movement used to be about, let's clean up pollution. I grew up in Los Angeles in the 50s. The smog there was really bad. After a day of play, my lungs would hurt. A tremendous amount has been done to clean up the air. Environmentalism is responsible for our national parks, which are treasures for the world. And it used to be that environmentalism was about conservation, protecting endangered species, this kind of thing, as a human duty. Now it has shifted, starting, I think, with deep ecology in the 1970s, which we can discuss if you'd like, to humans are the cancer on the planet. If humans thrive, then the earth dies, this kind of thing. And it's very dangerous to consider yourself a cancer, an AIDS, a plague. That kind of misanthropy can lead to some very destructive places.
1-800-955-1776 is our phone number. I'm always reluctant to bring up any kind of Hitler or Nazi analogies, but this one is just so very close, because Hitler and his henchmen always justified the Holocaust and the mass murder of, mental defectives, Jews, gypsies, and others, based upon the idea that this was like a virus, that these were like vermin, that they had to be exterminated. And the interesting thing about what you call deep environmentalism, and it's made clear in this documentary, The War on Humans, is there's almost a suggestion that it's not just one group of human beings, it's human beings in general who need to be exterminated or at least limited.
Yeah, you see a really profound, deep self-hatred developing. And I think it's a form of decadence. You know, we've had such tremendous success in the West in terms of thriving, unprecedented prosperity, unprecedented liberty and freedom. And it's almost like that has caused some people, particularly in the ruling class, the intelligentsia, to kind of start eating their own tails. And so you see this deep and growing, I have to say, anger against humanity, and it's even expressed in popular culture. For example, I think this is really classic, The Day the Earth Stood Still, the movies. There have been two of them. The first one was in the early 50s, Michael Rennie, and good science fiction, of course, tries to probe and discuss things that are current day. And in the original The Day the Earth Stood Still, the space alien came to Earth to save humanity from itself because we were worth saving. In the remake with Keanu Reeves, the space alien comes to Earth to commit total genocide in order to save the planet. That kind of thinking is growing. You see it in popular culture. You see it in environmental activism. You see it in places like Santa Monica literally giving, quote, rights, the rights of nature. You see it in a proposal for something called ecocide, which would criminalize large-scale resource development and land use, which is now being pushed in the United Nations. You see it in the deep ecology movement that says that human population has to be reduced to under 1 billion. You know, there's a difference between family planning, voluntary family planning, and radical depopulation. Radical depopulation, reducing us to under 1 billion, would require genocidal means, just as you described.
1-800-955-1776, our phone number. We're speaking to Wesley Smith and Dr. John West. John is the author of several books, including Darwin Day in America. John, did I have this right? There was a recent book and a lot of attention to a fantasy by, I believe, one of the leaders in this deep environmentalism movement about how wonderful the Earth and particularly America would be if human beings went extinct. Are you gentlemen familiar with this?
There was a book called The Earth Without Us.
Yes, there it is.
Yes, and it talked about how what an Edenic state the planet would be if people weren't here. And my response was, yeah, but who would know, because there'd be nobody to appreciate it.
But it's also the possibilities of that. If human beings are a bit more adaptable to the environment even than cockroaches, I think.
Yeah.
And because we could actually manipulate the environment to our behalf. So this is, unless you have really, really, really bad government planning, the idea that human beings are going to go extinct, but animals are going to survive and plants are going to survive somehow. John West, that's not a realistic prospect, is it?
No, it's not. But again, I think you're highlighting it's not just in novels. It's in reputable people like Sir David Attenborough, the famous wildlife filmmaker, who earlier this year, and we discussed actually on an earlier show a few months ago, called human beings a plague, which you earlier talked about how in Germany, they actually talked and compared people to viruses and things. We have people today who aren't, unfortunately, on the fringe referring to human beings, all human beings, as a plague. And the reason why we have famine in Africa, according to Attenborough, is, well, there are too many people. Okay, too many people in Africa. And that's the problem. People are now regarded as a threat, not a blessing. And that is a radical change in the Judeo-Christian, Greco-Roman, our tradition of how we view human beings.
Okay, Wesley Smith, in terms of pushing back against this stupidity, and it's really not just stupidity, it's viciousness. It is anti-human. It is anti-life. What's the most important point to keep in mind?
The most important point is for people to actually see this is a real threat. I feel sometimes as if people like John and I are urging people to man the bastions in the walls and to stand for human dignity, stand for the importance of human life, and because there's a horde coming, the orcs, we'll say, from Lord of the Rings, and people in the city are saying, they're not even anywhere near us. It reminds me of Baghdad Bob, you know. There aren't any American tanks in Baghdad, and of course, behind him, there were the tanks rolling through the town.
Okay, we need to give people some of the tools that they need and some of the abilities to rally the forces of sanity here. And we have an event coming up that we're going to announce where folks can come in and enjoy lunch and a live broadcast of this radio show together with a number of the stars of Discovery Institute. That's coming up 13 days from now. We'll tell you all about it and more coming up on The MedVed Show.
1-800-955-1776. The Michael MedVed Show.
And it's easy to figure out why Discovery Institute, with some of the best minds in America, actually in the world, has become such a powerhouse in debates about, questions like human exceptionalism. Are human beings uniquely precious? Is there something particularly worthwhile about this species? Or are we, as Peter Singer, the very distinguished professor at Princeton University, by some reckonings, the highest paid academic in the country, are we really no better than a mosquito, or for that matter, than a plant? And the plant liberation movement, no, it's not a joke anymore. It is going forward. That's part of the work of Wesley Smith. He does the Human Exceptionalism column at National Review Online. He's a senior fellow at Discovery Institute. And John West is with me in studio. John is the associate director of Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. They've collaborated on a new documentary. You can see the trailer, The War on Humans. It's available at michaelmedved.com. Just click on the science and culture icon. And gentlemen, I wanted to let people know that people can come out and meet some of these folks that they've been hearing from Discovery Institute and meet me for a live broadcast of this show. And no, not every minute of the broadcast is going to be related to Discovery Institute's work, but there will be lunch and a 3-hour live broadcast. Folks can come early and tell me what they think I should say on the show. And it's all going to be happening 13 days from today on October 23rd here in Seattle. The only proviso is because it does include a very nice lunch. It's going to be $10 per person. Very reasonable. And you'll be able to exchange ideas and even maybe ask some questions and be on air during the broadcast. You can find out about it by going ahead to our website at michaelmedved.com and again clicking on the science and culture icon. That's October 23rd from 11:30. That's when the doors are going to open till 3 p.m. the end of the show, and then we'll have a book signing after the show. 11:30 to 3 p.m. On October 23rd. That's Wednesday, 2 weeks from yesterday. Gentlemen, let's go to calls, folks who are eager to speak with you. Janet in Chicago. Janet, you're on the MedVed Show with John West and Wesley Smith.
Thank you, gentlemen, for being on the show today. Hello, Michael. Thank you for taking my call. I'm eager to listen to the rest of their discussion because they haven't gotten to talk very much. But what I was very intrigued by was this idea that this anti-humanism, as if that's what it's called, has permeated into the environmentalist groups. And I really, it strikes with me because I would be considered, I guess, a right-wing conservative. But I have always been very involved in the environment, and my friends, you know, kind of laughed at animal care and shelters and recycling and everything else. And I actually had a girlfriend who's a right, left, very liberal, call me an enigma because of my political views and the fact that I love the world and everything else. But it's definitely with all these groups, they've crossed into this anti-human thing, even with dog rescues. What they will do to save the life of a puppy, which it breaks my heart to see something bad happen, but they have no worth for a human life. You know, they're pro-abortion at any stage, but yet they're worried about, you know, a dog that you know, was left out in the cold. To me, that's the real dichotomy. I mean, that's not an enigma. You know, I'm not the enigma here.
Janet, that's so well said. By the way, I also consider myself a green elephant, a pro-conservation Republican and conservative. But Wesley Smith, is she right that it's the other side that's contradictory?
Yeah, well, the other side has moved from that kind of model of human duty to treat animals humanely, to treat the environment in a responsible manner, into an animal rights model and a nature rights model. Michael, I was on your show about a year and a half ago, I think, and I debated Gary Francione. In fact, we did it twice on your show, who's an animal rights activist, and he was saying at that time that human beings have no special dignity, no unique value, that what gives value to life is sentience. People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals says that what gives life to value to life is the ability to feel pain or to suffer. And thus, since a cow can feel pain and a human being can feel pain, animal husbandry, cattle ranching, is the same thing as human slavery. And you say this to people, you let them know it, and they don't believe it's true because they don't think these people can be serious. But they're deadly serious, and I mean that. And just let me give you an example. This is from People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. They, for several years, ran something called the Holocaust on Your Plate campaign, in which they literally equated eating meat with Auschwitz.
Yeah, and their line was, we had them on, and I debated, Pete, I think twice, about the Holocaust on Your Plate campaign.
Yeah.
Because they tried to make the point that more chickens were victimized by chickenicide every single day than human beings were, Jewish human beings were victimized by genocide during the years of the Nazi horrors. And the idea that you're going to equate the worth of a human life with the worth of a chicken life is so deeply demented.
Yes, but they believe it, and they're very... Listen to this quote. This is from Holocaust on Your Plate. Like the Jews murdered in concentration camps, animals are terrorized when they are housed in huge filthy warehouses and rounded up for shipment to slaughter. The leather sofa and handbag are the moral equivalent of the lampshades made from the skins of people killed in the death camps. Michael, I've been to Auschwitz. I've been to Birkenau. I've walked that awful railroad terminus where Jews were divided for either slave labor or immediate extermination. And any movement that can't distinguish between animal husbandry and the worst evil perpetrated against human beings has no business preaching morality to anyone.
Well said, Wesley. And Janet, thanks for a great call. I do want to make clear, and I think it's important going forward, when it comes to what Peter Huber calls hard green, actually having a beautiful world to sustain human life and a beautiful world so that human beings can recreate and enjoy nature, don't you think it is an appropriate conservative position to be in favor of conservation?
Of course, and it's a human duty. It's a human duty to our posterity. It's a human duty to each other. We should be responsible users of the environment for human thriving and also preserving for future generations and so forth. Treating animals humanely is a human duty. That's part of human exceptionalism.
And by the way, it's a biblical obligation. In Jewish law, there are laws about what's called tsar balei chayim, which means respects for any living thing.
I'm not an expert on that, but if you do look in the Bible, you will see rules that require proper treatment of animals. For example, the oxen were not to be prevented from eating while they were threshing, right?
Yeah, or unequally yoked, or the lots more. When we come back, part of the idea of treating animals with respect was it made it more likely to treat human beings with respect, which, of course, is the closest we can come to treating God himself with respect. We'll be right back with John West and Wesley Smith.
Michael Medved.
Minutes after the hour on the Michael Medved Show with John and Wesley. No, that's not John Wesley. This is not your Methodist hour. It's John West of Discovery Institute and the Center for Science and Culture, and Wesley J. Smith, who is a regular contributor to National Review Online and a senior fellow at Discovery Institute. They have collaborated on a brand new documentary, which is both chilling and fascinating, and it indicates why people should be concerned about these issues. It's called The War on Humans, and people can check out an extended trailer of that forthcoming documentary at michaelmedved.com. Just click on the icon for science and culture. And I should say, for the upcoming Discovery Institute event, where we're going to be doing a live broadcast, I'm going to be joined by Steve Meyer, the director of the Center for Science and Culture, my good friend David Klinghoffer, the author of many books, former literary editor for National Review, and others. All you have to do is go to our website and sign up for it. It's coming up October 23rd, 13 days from today. You do need to sign up because there's limited space. John, we were just speaking during the break about how strange it is and how strange these ideas are about this idea that a bug is a cat, is a dog, is a dolphin, is a person, that all life is equal in value. When did that idea get started and where's it come from?
That's an excellent question, because it isn't a natural progression from loving nature to thinking that a ladybug is the same as your son or daughter. I mean, it really
is. Or your dog, for that matter.
And so, and I think this is one of the areas where people think, you know, what happens in the ivory tower doesn't matter. Actually, yes, it does. These ideas, you know, come from a variety of sources, but one of the key foundational ideas, if you read some of these people who are making these outlandish claims and you keep digging down, actually is Charles Darwin. I mean, Darwin really, in a book called The Descent of Man, tried to make the case that human beings really aren't special, that basically everything you find in human beings, from language to morality, you name it, you can find it somewhere else in nature. So we really aren't that unique. And frankly, that is a takeaway that a lot, not all, but a lot of his leading followers have taken over the last century. And you see this in among this fringe, or really the radical environmentalists, who are really, I think, twisting what true environmentalism should be. People like Christopher Maines, author of a book called Green Rage. He had been involved in a group called Earth First, which has been responsible for some of the eco-terrorism. And here's what he said. Darwin invited humanity to face the fact that the observation of nature has revealed not one scrap of evidence that humankind is superior or special or even particularly more interesting than, say, lichen. Now, I mean,
I know some human beings who are less interesting than lichen, but not many. Let's go to Rob in Louisville, Kentucky. Rob, you're on the Michael Medved Show with John and Wesley.
Long-time listener, first-time caller. I really appreciate you for all you do. I don't always agree with you, but I definitely respect the way you think and debate.
Thank you.
I may have an interesting perspective on this in that libertarian, vegan, family man, Christian, evangelical from Louisville. So I'm all over the map when it comes to these things. You notice that most people kind of have a paradigm on one side or the other. But politically, I'm laissez-faire, and then, you know, I care a lot about animal rights, but I'm also, you know, a Christian. So the one thing I want to start with, and I could talk to you guys probably about this for hours, but I'll try to keep it short.
You need to.
Definitely. The one thing I want to start with is basically that the anti-human movement. I definitely am against everything that's anti-human. I'm completely pro-life on every level, pro-animal life, human life. Any sentient creature, I think, has amazing value, because I do believe that all of us, you know, come from the same God. With that said, that movement, the anti-human movement, it really does hinge on whether or not there is a God. Most of these folks, I'm extremely familiar with Singer. I've read his books, and I agree with him on a lot of things and disagree with him on, obviously, a lot of others. I'm familiar with Francione as well. And where it all hinges is atheism. If there's no God, then we really don't have any more value than a mosquito. But there's no objective morality. We're an accident. We're a cosmic accident. These folks believe that, so it's very easy to trace back where it comes in. Now, on Darwinism, you obviously have to remember it is survival of the fittest. So you would think that there would be some, you know, place in there where they would care about human flourishing, because we are, you know, the most advanced evolution that there is. But that's, to me, that's where it comes from, is atheism versus not necessarily.
Okay, we will get a quick reaction from Wesley Smith and John West. Also, my question that you can pose to people, where you, with this one question, you can prove that they acknowledge that people are different and more valuable than animals. We'll be right back.
Portions of the Michael Medved Show are brought to you in part by the Discovery Institute. To learn more, click on the Science and Culture banner at michaelmedved.com.
On the Michael Medved Show with John and Wesley. That's John West, the Associate Director of the Center for Science and Culture, and Wesley J. Smith, who is a senior fellow at Discovery Institute and a regular contributor to NRO, National Review Online. Gentlemen, we were just talking to Rob in Louisville, who's another conservative who is sensitive to the pain and suffering that animals go through and believes that part of being a good human being, which is certainly what the Bible teaches and certainly what all religious traditions teach that I know of, that respecting animals is a way of respecting God's creation. But the one thing, and Rob, you still with us?
Yes, sir, I am.
Okay, well, thanks for hanging on from Louisville. Mm-hmm. This is the one thing that I would try for people who really do believe that there's no difference, that human beings are not special, that they're not more interesting than lichen. And that's this. Rob, have you ever driven along a country road somewhere and seen roadkill?
Yes, unfortunately.
Yeah, I know it's unfortunate. It's not a nice thing. I mean, except if it's raccoons. But if it's anything other than raccoons, it's not a nice thing. And even with raccoons, it's not a nice thing. You see a dead animal, and it's sad. However, anyone who has seen both a dead human body and everyone who has seen a dead roadkill, we respond very differently, even if that human body is a complete stranger. Even if it's in a photograph by Matthew Brady of a Civil War battlefield, anyone explain that profound difference in reaction? And I think it's universal. I think even for people who are totally brainwashed with PETA, if they see a dead bug, right, they don't respond the same way they would to seeing a dead human being.
Right. I think we're definitely wired. I mean, again, whether we subscribe to atheism or theism, I think everybody would agree we're definitely wired. One example is if you have pets and you love your pets, and then you have your first son, which I just had, the reaction, you know, to your own kids versus your pets, as much as we say our pets are our kids, there's definitely a difference. The one thing I wanted to get out while I was still on here, though, is that on the other side of the argument, I think some of these men who are oftentimes, you know, kind of called wackos, like Singer and some others, if you read their whole books, they make very logical points about factory farming and about now we've got the GMO issue. I'm here in Kentucky. I was actually in Rand Paul's office a few weeks ago with some locals that were, you know, trying to get his position on GMOs. So you've got all this environmental destruction through genetically modified organisms and through factory farming. And we do kill 3 billion beautiful sentient creatures, you know, pretty much per year. And I mean, to me, that is an issue. Animals may not be humans and worth as theists that we believe, but they definitely are close. I mean,
okay. Appreciate your perspective. Wesley Smith, quick response.
Sure. Yeah, and I can't get into as much depth as obviously I'd like to, but I think we have to make a distinction between animal rights and animal welfare. Animal rights is an ideology that creates a moral equality between humans and animals, and the goal of animal rights is to do away with all animal domestication of every kind. That's the goal. Animal welfare says that human beings have the highest moral value, that we have the right to make proper and humane use of animals for our benefit, but that, as I said, in doing so, we have a human obligation to treat animals in a proper fashion. I was once at a college, and I gave a discussion about the importance of human exceptionalism, and a young man got up and he said, well, that's hubristic. You think we can do anything we want to animals because we're human? And I said, after I'd said 9 times during the speech, that wasn't the case. And I asked him a cogent question. If being human in and of itself is not what gives us the obligation to treat animals properly and humanely, what does? And he made like Jackie Gleason on The Honeymooners, hamana, 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 hamana. There's no answer other than human responsibility. So animal rights is about imposing human duties that, of course, can't be imposed on animals because they're not moral agents. And the same thing is true of things like nature rights and plant rights, which seeks to have human self-sacrifice for the benefit of others. Only humans have that capacity.
Let's go to Karen in Cleveland. Karen, you're on the Michael Medved Show.
you for taking my call. Thank you for having this show. I'm a second-generation dog breeder. I breed purebred dogs, and I am a part of the American Kennel Club's system, and also I write for the National Animal Interest Alliance. And my point is that these large animal rights groups, the Humane Society of the United States and PETA, and there's several others, these are religions. In the case of HSUS, it was actually founded a long time ago. It was an anti-vivisection group, but the different people took over the group back in the 80s, and they've actually hijacked the humane movement, and people see these pitiful pictures of pets, and so they send them money, and so the animal rights movement, they run it as a religion, and the new religion is to save animal lives and to disinvest from our own human selves. As a dog breeder, what's happening is the animal rights organizations are getting involved on local levels, and they're changing our laws town to town so that people like myself, and now I'm not affected yet, but people like myself who breed maybe 2-3 litters a year, they want us all to be licensed, and they want us to all have kennel space, which means like cages, steel cages, and we have to have all these different ways of breeding dogs so that our dogs are then removed from our, we don't get to like live with them in our houses. We have to have a kennel for them.
What's the problem with your living in the houses with the dogs?
Well, they want everyone to have, they want to regulate the industry, the dog.
You have to respect the dog's private space, a room of their own?
Well, that's what, I mean, it's funny, but I mean, what they want us to do is have it in such a way so that dogs are removed from their human beings and so that they're all clinically clean and they're clinically raised. But the problem is the best purebred dogs are bred by individuals who treat them as part of the family. And of course, there's a difference between human beings and dogs. I love my dogs, but I would still jump into the river and save the child before I save my own dog.
Well, good for you. Karen, you're the kind of dog breeder that it sounds like it makes sense to do business with. We will be right back with a response from Wesley Smith and John West of Discovery Institute. Sign up, go to our website, michaelmedved.com. Sign up to join us at a live broadcast of this whole radio show coming up October 23rd. Go to michaelmedved.com, click on the science and culture icon. 55 minutes after the hour on the Michael Medved Show. For more on these issues that we're raising on this Science and Culture Hour on the Michael Medved Show with Wesley J. Smith and John West of Discovery Institute, that you can click on our website at michaelmedved.com, the Science and Culture icon, and you can then proceed to see a trailer for their new documentary. It's upcoming. It's called The War on Humans. And for more information, you can also go to waronhumans.com. Let's go to Mike in El Segundo, California. Mike, you're on the Michael Medved Show with John and Wesley.
Hi, thank you. I have a point to make and several questions. I'll make it quick. If you do the math, you divide the world's population by the number of square feet of land in the state of Texas, I think you find that it's maybe 1,500 square feet for every group or family of three people. So the world is hardly going to get so overpopulated that no one will have room to stand, which I think was a common claim in the past. And then my questions, one is, if animals have rights, should they also have responsibilities and be imprisoned or executed for killing other animals? And number two, I've heard that there's individuals or groups of people that think the world is so overpopulated, they want to reduce the world's population, call off the population, reduce it to maybe, is it 500 million, maybe 500 million people or so? So I'm wondering, who are these people and groups? How much do they want to reduce the Earth's population by? And how they plan to do it? And then the third question is, if the Western countries all reduce their population based on this left-wing propaganda, and all these Islamist Muslim countries do not reduce their populations but keep growing them, won't that help Islamist Muslims take over the world faster?
Okay, quick.
I think those are excellent questions and points. I'm sure Wesley will chime in, but there are lots of people who think we should radically reduce population. You asked for people. One of them is in your own state of Texas, evolutionary zoologist Eric Pianca at the University of Texas, who argues that we should eliminate up to 90% of the world's human population.
He's been on this show also. Wesley, last comment here.
Sure. This kind of thinking has permeated the mainstream of the environmental movement, and you really see it a lot in global warming advocacy.
Let's go quickly to Joe in Tacoma. You've got the last word, Joe.
Hey, real quick, I want to say that I grew up here in the Pacific Northwest, did all my hiking in the Olympics. I love the environment. I'm a conservative, too. But bottom line is that this has permeated our society. And it's scary because any government that tries to latch on to this, at a certain point, the governing become threatened by the governed. And it's a great excuse. It's like a religion. Great excuse for them to exert ever more control over our lives. And it's antithetical to the American experiment because, humans have the ability to...
Well, the American experiment is based upon the idea that we have a creator and that every human being has infinite worth. The American experience, as John and Wesley would point out, is not based on the idea that every flower has infinite worth, though we like flowers in this greatest nation on God's green earth.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2013. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.